Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio with me, Deb Wolf, debwolf.ca. That's because I'm up in Canada. And for a change, I am not complaining about the weather today. It is sunny and it's 70 degrees and I can't wait to get out and walk some dogs. Today we have a really special guest, someone you might have seen on TV, on CNN, on bank commercials of all places, making some dogs roll over in a very happy way. So I want to welcome to the show, and I'll let him introduce himself to you because his credits are so long. I'll let him pick and choose the best stuff. Welcome to the show, Joel Silverman. Welcome.
Hello there. How are you doing? Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm great. And it's lovely seeing you on TV. It's lovely seeing those dogs roll over and they look so happy. So this is your first time on All Paws Pet Talk Radio with me. So I'd love it if you could introduce yourself to the audience, Joel.
Well, actually, a lot of people know me from, I had a show on Animal Planet called Good Dog You. It aired from 1999 till about 2009 for about 10 years. It was one of the very first shows on Animal Planet. And then more recently, I did a show called, I have a TV series called What Color Is Your Dog, which is a syndicated show, and it's airing internationally now, and I pulled it about a year and a half ago in the United States, but it'll be back out again. And I've written four books. People know in the dog training world know my first book is called What Color Is Your Dog, and it's training your dog based on personality. I believe that there's not necessarily one style of dog training. There's the best animal trainers are the ones that can kind of be a cork on the water and work with the dog based on the dog's personality rather than, you know, a set style of dog training. And then, but I grew up as a marine mammal trainer. I was a killer whale trainer at SeaWorld early on in the 70s and 80s. So a lot of my techniques are kind of a hybrid style. I kind of cross between working with marine mammals and working with dogs.
I want to ask you about that. It seems when we watch the marine mammals that it's completely food motivated. Is that true? Are they always given a fish?
You know what? I don't know. You know, everybody's a little different. What we've always done, what I always learned, was we use what's called a varied reinforcement schedule, meaning that the animal set understood that it wasn't going to necessarily get a fish or one fish or a half a bucket of fish, but it was just going to be sometimes we would bridge, you know, say, okay, you did it correctly. We might just do another behavior. We might give you something. We might give you a lot. But what we learned to do was that motivation, they start learning through, hey, I might not get something for five, six behaviors, but after six behaviors, it might be a half a bucket of fish. But what you do with that is you create that motivation, that varied reinforcement schedule where it's not. And some trainers, and I'm sure you see if people see dolphin shows, or you might see people that some trainers just do that thing where they, you know, give a fish each time, which, you know, I mean, it's fine. But what I do is I've kind of carried that to dog training, though, in the fact that we use as many types of rewards as possible, that very, you know, reinforcement schedule. And they, with dogs, of course, we can use treats. We could use tassel rewards, which is petting the animal. We could use a lot of different types of things. So,
well, we're going to do two segments today. And in the second segment, I do want to ask you to compare dog breeds, dog types, personality types. So we'll get to that a little bit later, but we've got a special month going on, a puppy month, puppy day, National Puppy Day today. And so I want to make sure we cover what to get the puppy and how you know you're picking your right puppy. But I do like what you said, because I always say there's more than one way to train a dog. And just like with kids, not every student learns the same way. Some kids want to learn hands-on. Some kids learn by hearing. Some kids learn by reading. You know, there's all kinds of things. And, you know, there's some dogs who are so driven to get that ball. They'll do anything for a ball, but they couldn't care less about a cookie. So, you know, you got to figure out what works for your dog. So I love it that you're mixing it up a bit. It's not one size fits all. How could it be, right?
Exactly, exactly. And then I had in my What Color Is Your Dog, you know, in that model, you know, dog is one of five colors, and it's kind of expands on exactly what you just said. You know, red, orange, yellow, green, or blue. And the closer your dog is to the center of the spectrum, the easier your dog is to train. So yellow dogs are in the middle of the spectrum. Mellow yellow, some dogs are naturally yellow. You know, some dogs are yellow because over the course they've just had a really great owner that has exposed them and desensitized them to things, and they just don't care about stuff. And then we have the warmer color dogs. Orange dog is a high-strung dog. You know, they're going to be lunging, they're going to be barking, they're going to be just really excitable. That's an orange dog. And a red dog was even more high-strung, just off the wall, just going crazy. It's like an orange dog, but just you know, amplified. So the oranges and the reds are the warmer color dogs. And then we've moved the opposite direction away from those guys on the other end of the yellow. We have a green, which is a timid and apprehensive dog. And then we have a blue dog, which is going to be more, you know, afraid of everything, just afraid. You walk in the house, he runs under a bed. You know, it's more extreme. So the blues and greens are the cooler color dogs. Reds and oranges are the warmer color dogs. And my whole philosophy is I would never train a cooler color dog like a warmer color dog. The way I walk, the way I talk, the way I move, the way I reward, the way I correct, the tools I use, everything I do is like night and day. And that really is, in a nutshell, my whole philosophy.
Well, okay, so let's take this into the puppy realm. A family's out there, or a single person couple, they're thinking of getting a puppy. I always try and make sure they consider exercise and grooming really, really high up on their list. You know, just because the dog has blue eyes or freckles or looks like it needs a home doesn't mean your home is the right one. You know, if he needs to go running every day and you're a couch potato, maybe not a good match, right? So what else can you tell people when they're picking a puppy? Because, you know, it is puppy day. So let's help them pick the right puppy.
You know, a lot of people, nobody talks about this at all. And I talk about this in my seminars. I talk about this in my books. Prey drive. And people need to understand what prey drive is. You know, and prey drive, for the listeners out there, a lot of people don't know, and that's all valid. You know, they don't know. But it's prey drive is a dog's desire to go after prey. Sights, sounds, and odors are all going to be elevated. They're going to want to listen more. They're going to want to see more. They're going to want to smell more. They're going to want to do they're going to use those things to basically focus. And certain dogs have a natural high prey drive. I always like to use Jack Russell Terriers as a great example because these are dogs that are bred to go after prey. Okay, so
world record. They're the world record holders for killing rats. The world record is 80 rats in 30 minutes, which is just unbelievable if you can think of how quickly that dog was moving.
Exactly, and you know, and the thing is, so what I tell people is the fact that not every dog is for everybody. If you want a dog that is not going to be reactive, like that reactive type of a breed, and you want a dog that's more laid back, you might not want that breed. And you might want a dog that is more laid back, like a, and if you're looking for a smaller dog, instead of a Jack Russell, you might want to get, you know, a dog like maybe a poodle, you know, or maybe get yourself a Maltese, or maybe get yourself a cockapoo, or something like that.
A tiny spaniel. Yeah, something more layabout. But there are some ways. Sometimes I recommend older dogs. If you're really stuck on the Jack Russell personality, a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old might be just the ticket. Already trained, a little bit mellow. Or maybe one with three legs. You know, there's a lot of injured dogs out there that need home, special needs dogs. He'll still have that Jack Russell headspace, but he might not need to chase the cat and everything else.
Exactly. No, you raise a very good point. And also, what people need, you know, the older dog, you mentioned about the older dogs, you know, Jack Russells, and I don't know of a lot of breeds that go through it, but Jack Russells in their, I'm trying to remember about the ages, roughly 7 months to about 12 months, they go through this weird phase where they are, they can get a little belligerent, you know, and it's just a phase they kind of go through. And, you know, just need to deal with it and train the dog and everything. But, of course, a 5-year-old dog, you're not having to go through that phase with that Jack Russell as well.
Everybody, we are talking to Joel Silverman. We've run out of time on the first segment, but that's okay because we're coming back for a second segment, and we're weaving in how to pick a puppy with all kinds of information on the different personalities, different breeds, and the different kinds of training. So stay tuned, Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, with me, Deb Wolf, and my guest, Joel Silverman. We'll be back in a second. Stay tuned.
I'm your doggy,
I'm your doggy,
and I love you,
and I love you.
And you know that
you know
I really do.
I really do.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio, and it is sunny in the rainforest, which is why I sound so happy. I can see the field with the dogs playing. There's two older labs right now out, bunch of chickens walking around. It's a good day. So how come those labs aren't standing next to the fence trying to get at the chickens? And if you've got dogs that won't stop chasing the cat, we had an email earlier this week from someone with an intact male dog who just will not. She's had dogs before, had dogs all her life. All her other dogs were trainable to not chase the cat. This one just won't accept it. He just won't. He's supposed to be a bird dog. She turns her back and he'll try to kill the cat. He'll scream and carry on and chase the cats. So Joel Silverman is here. What are we going to tell her to do about this dog that chases a cat with the prey drive you were just talking about?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a couple issues with that. Number one is I always like to ask people, you know, how long has that been happening? Because you need to have an
she
idea.
She says
really how,
4 years or more,
okay.
She says.
Yeah,
there's multiple cats.
Years. Yeah, 4 years is a long time. And so that dog has been doing that for 4 years, and you need to find a way to break that cycle. And the longer it is, you know, it's been doing it, the more difficult it's going to be. And so there's two things you want to think about. One way is there's two issues. You need to find a way to correct the dog, okay, as the dog does what it's doing, that behavior, okay, and you need to find a way to prevent the dog from being in that situation to do the behavior in the first place, okay? So preventative training and corrections. When we talk about bad behaviors happening, you're either going to redirect the dog, you're either going to correct the dog, or you're going to prevent it from happening. There's three ways of dealing with those issues. And so
you stop him from practicing the bad habit, and you try and make him, direct him to do something you'd rather have. How would you do that here?
Okay. But what I was saying was, you don't do all of them. You're going to do one or two of the three, okay?
Okay.
But you may not do the three, okay? The one that you're probably, in that situation, you're probably not going to do is redirect the dog. There's nothing you have that's greater than that dog's desire to go after the prey. If you have something that's greater than that, that's fine and dandy. But in most situations where a dog wants to go after the prey or go after the cat, there's nothing that you have. That's where I say I'm what's called a balanced dog trainer. I believe it's not one style fits all. There are some people that believe that you can redirect the dog away from that. If the desire to go for that prey is greater than anything you have, you can't redirect the dog. You need to find a way to correct the dog, okay?
And do you know what? I have to say the trainers I've encountered throughout my career who believe that, they tend to reject some dogs as untrainable. So
yeah, exactly. No,
I wouldn't say they're that it works for them. It doesn't.
Exactly. And so what I say is this: is I always like to try to redirection, and it can work in some situations. But like we just mentioned, every dog is different, and every situation is different. And when we get into corrections, when we talk about correcting the dog, and I patented a collar called an alternative training collar. It's an alternative to a chain collar, for example. It's leather in front. You know, that's the way it works. It's all about how you're going to correct the dog. If you correct a dog, if somebody corrects a dog and the dog was going crazy, any correction you do is going to be severe, it's going to be abusive, and it would be something that I would never recommend anybody do. But the whole art to finding a way to correct the dog is to get the dog, get what's happening far enough away as your dog starts to alert a little bit and says, what is that, and starts to alert way before the dog is whining, way before the dog is barking and going crazy. Now you can correct the dog in a fair way, and maybe even using the dog's regular collar, the flat collar, but you can correct the dog in a way that is fair, that's rational, that where the dog is like, okay, great, I understand what's going on. Now once we do it, we have a place to start. Now you can slowly start bringing the dog closer to that thing that's getting him excited. But I think we can all agree that if you go and correct the dog, when the dog is in the moment and when the dog is freaking out, whatever you do is going to be, A, can be something that's severe that can hurt the animal, and B, it's irrational. The dog is so irrational, he can't figure out what's going on.
See, now there's something to that. I notice with dogs with high prey drive that when they see the cat, the squirrel, whatever it is, or border collies when they're actually working, when they're looking at the sheep, their pupils dilate. And I try to point that out to owners, that this is a physical chemical thing. You're kind of, the dog's like whooped up on adrenaline. It's not the time to be getting a patient calm lesson from you, right? Like it's a bit biological here.
And that's exactly, and you're absolutely correct. And the thing about it, what people need to understand is that if there's something that dog is focused on, and you want to focus a dog onto you, the mistake that people make, that people say, "Well, I'm going to redirect the dog." What are you going to redirect the dog with? A treat, a toy? Because if you redirect the dog with a treat or toy, you're reinforcing the dog for playing out those actions, those aggressive actions. That's a reward. I mean, from an animal behavior's perspective, you're actually reinforcing the dog for what the dog did. So what I want to do is find a way to...
This is where timing comes in, right? So the dog jumps on the furniture, so you'll tell it to get off, so you'll give it the cookie. But he can't seem to figure out how to get the cookie without jumping on the furniture in the first place. Timing. So when people are picking their puppy, we've already talked about the different colors, and some of it's according to breed. But sometimes, you know, I can meet a Labrador Retriever that's as mellow as they come, a bomb-proof dog. You almost have to wake it up to take for a walk. And I can meet another Labrador Retriever, same breed, same everything, same age, same sex, who's bananas, won't stop jumping up and down. So how do people know what they're going to get when they go looking for that puppy?
Okay, when you go and look at a litter of puppies, and this is not to say that this is always the case, but when you're looking at a litter of puppies, that litter of puppies is, they're 10 to 12 weeks old. Maybe you go to an animal shelter and there's some puppies there from all kind of one litter, or maybe you go to a breeder and you want to get a dog. But let's say it's a purebred dog, a litter of labs. A lot of times that dog, and I'm not saying every time, because I've trained a lot of dogs for movies and commercials that I've gotten, and this has been the case. But when you could see that dog, it's just kind of just, you pick it up, it's just really, really super mellow, and you've gone back a few times, and that's just the way the dog is, and you see another one that's just really outgoing and wants to mouth your hand and play with your hand or whatever, a lot of times that's kind of the way they go. And you can have a litter of puppies, and you raise a very good point. You can have a litter of puppies, and that litter of puppies can have, for the most part, labs. They're going to be maybe orange dogs, a few yellow dogs in there, maybe yellow, and maybe a green dog in there, but most of them are going to be on the orange side, which is kind of a little high-strung, and that's just for a puppy. And then, but some might be yellow, a little laid back. And there's a real good possibility, if you constantly going back to that dog, you've gone back three or four times, and that dog is always that way, you're going to probably start with a dog that's more laid back. And that's going to make things a little bit easier for you. But you might not want that. You might want the orange dog. You might want a dog that's going to be a little more high-strung, that's going to chase a ball, that's going to go running with you or whatever. So that's the good news.
Okay, so one thing I have trouble with telling people because I do breed dogs, and sometimes when they buy puppies, they buy them 2 months old, so they haven't had their final set of shots yet. And we're at this stage where ideally I want the pup to experience a lot, everything that life is going to have for him in little small, safe doses, right? Walks and outings and all this stuff. But on the other hand, I don't want it getting sick. So what do people do? They get their puppy home. It's not fully vaccinated yet. It's had two of the three sets, right? Usually. Now what do? They don't want to isolate it, but they got to expose it. So what do you recommend for that beginning puppy exposure and new experiences?
Well, your pet's health it's a no-brainer. It's always a priority. So whatever you need to do with the shots and hold off the dog, to exposing your dog and desensitizing your dog, you need to do that. But the day that you can take your dog out, that you got your last shot and you can expose your dog, desensitization, socialization is the key. It really, really is the key. So, when you get that last shot, you need to take your dog out and start socializing your dog and desensitize your dog. In the meantime, what I would highly recommend is to bring as many people over to your house as possible. Invite as many people.
Okay, so Joel, we're going to come back after the break and talk more about that. I hate to interrupt you, but we're right at commercial break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes to talk more about how you can socialize your puppy or your dog, your newly adopted dog, how to do this. And I'm going to ask him some questions about the different breeds. Stay tuned.
I'm your doggy,
I'm your doggy,
and I love
to Smart Animal Talk with me, Deb Wolf, debwolf.ca if you're looking for me, and Camp Good Dog on Facebook if you want to see all the happy campers swimming and playing on the farm here. We are talking today with Joel Silverman, and we've kind of been touching on puppy issues because it's National Puppy Day, but we also had a bunch of emails sent in, and one of them covers an issue that if you did it right, it would be done. If you monitored your dog and you kennel trained him or figured out a method where he was always supervised in the house and you escorted him out and you reward him for going to the bathroom, it would be done. But this listener has a stud dog, intact male. She's had them before. This is the only one that's ever been like this. She lets him into the living room and turns her back for a second and he lifts his leg and he marks things. So she wants to know about that. And I thought we could sort of morph that into a general puppy house training question for Joel. Hi, Joel. Okay. You ready for this one?
Okay. You know, yeah. That's always a tough one. And, you know, that's probably one of the most difficult things to deal with, especially a dog that is kind of a stud dog that has done this. And again, you know, it's that same question I ask people, like, how long has a dog been doing this? You know, and if a dog's doing it for a while, in their mind, it becomes a conditioned behavior. It's not just doing it one time. It's conditioned to doing it. And in order to...
Like a habit, really. Like a routine, right?
Exactly. Yeah, totally. And what we need to do is find a way to break the habit. How do you do that? Well, the first thing is preventative training. Not giving your dog the opportunity to be in that situation. If you're not giving your dog the opportunity to be in that situation... And then the other thing I'd say real quick is, before we talk about that, is identify if it's happening in a certain place. If it's only one place that it's happening, then really find a way to take that area and do a number and really, really clean that area really good first. And then what you want to do is basically preventative training, not giving the dog the opportunity to be in that situation. A great suggestion is to, for a while anyways, if the dog is in the house with you, let's say it's in the living room in a corner, their dog always does in this one corner, I would probably take a long line and keep the dog in a light line. And, you know, in the house when I'm, just make sure I'm around
absolutely.
The dog.
People think that's so cruel, right? They think it's cruel. You're leashing your dog. Well, you know what? If you think it's so cruel, put a double leash. Put one around your waist and one attached to your dog. Now you're both leashed. You're just together for the day, okay? It's not
exactly,
cruel.
But you're not running around chasing the dog, you know, and, you know, Skippy, come over here, Skippy, come over here. And you're not constantly calling the dog's name. And that's the... But,
and
you know,
he can't sneak over to that corner without you knowing, because you feel the pull on your tummy because you're attached. That's the trick, right?
But the best way to avoid that from happening is not give the opportunity to let it happen. And that really is it. You know, I tell people all the time. So you want to make sure that you're not, and just getting to, you know, if you say to yourself, my dog lifts its leg every day. Well, if you can keep the dog on a leash and not give the dog the opportunity to go over there for 2 or 3 weeks, he's not giving the opportunity. He's never going to the bathroom in the house now. He's only going outside. Now you can slowly start conditioning the dog to coming over to that same spot or whatever, making sure he's not getting over to that wall. But you have to still have no leash. You still have the leash dragging. But that's what I would recommend.
So even though it's a little bit harder to train a dog when it's had a bad habit as opposed to a new thing that it's doing, it's still doable. You know, and I try and tell people, your dog, if you sent him to grandma's house and grandma let him beg for food and eat off the table, he'd learn that new bad habit so fast. So, you know, we can learn new good habits too. We just... Little stubborn at getting rid of the bad ones. How long? I was talking to Dr. Korn on this show, and he said 3 months, 6 weeks to 3 months. If a dog avoids the bad habit for 6 weeks to 3 months, then it's gone. And I thought that was kind of fast, but do you think that's about accurate?
That's probably a fair answer. It's a good general answer. I don't like to make too broad generalizations, but I think that's probably fair, you know?
Which is a lot longer than most people think. They think they should scold him a couple times and that'll do the trick from a distance. No, he's still practicing peeing in the house, right?
Well, exactly. And then there's two types of environments you train your dog in. I just elaborate something on you just said. A controlled training environment and uncontrolled. In a controlled training environment, we're training our dog to sit, stay, lie down. Dog is focused on us. A lot of times I'll use treats to train behaviors, fade out the treat, and start pairing that with a tactile reward. So the dog is no longer working for the treat. So that's my style of training. That's a controlled training environment. But uncontrolled is training environment. Dog is taking it upon himself to jump up on people, bark aggressively at other dogs, go to the bathroom in the house. We didn't control that. That was uncontrolled. So when you're correcting your dog in the uncontrolled training environment, it's always going to take longer. And the longer the dog has been doing that behavior, the longer it's going to take as well.
Okay, so we have two emails, a dog named Starlet and a dog named Stage, not related. One is a German Shepherd. The other is a Golden Retriever. They're both two-year-old females. One's intact, one isn't. Both jump up on their people excessively, knock kids over, knock groceries flying. Both the owners say they're just so affectionate and loving, but too much love. What can they do?
Okay, again, like I just said, uncontrolled training environment, the completion of the action is a reward. What's the action? Putting their feet up on people, okay? Leash and collar at the front door. When somebody comes in, leash and collar go on the dog. So as the dog goes up to put its feet up, what I recommend is just correct the dog from behind, just a light correction, say the word no, so the dog is not able to complete the action of putting its feet up, okay? So you just do that, drop the leash, have the people just reward the dog as the dog's just down there on the ground. If the dog decides to stay, have them step out the door, just repeat that cycle. What happens is the dog starts saying to itself, you know what? As my feet come off the ground, I'm getting corrected, so I'm not able to put my feet up. But if I just stay with my feet on the ground every time they come in, they reward, they just pet me. So does it let the dog take it upon himself to figure out, hey, listen, they're gonna reward me, just give me a nice tactical reward for just staying down. And if I go to put my feet up, I get corrected for it. You start doing that over and over again, get to the point where now you put the leash and collar on the dog, drop the leash when people come over because you're probably not going to put their feet up, and then get to the point where you're no longer putting leash and collar on the dog. That's my style of training your dog not to jump up on people.
Nice. Me too. I don't knee them in the chest. I don't do anything like that.
Oh, God.
Okay, so JoelSilverman.net. If you're listening right now and you want to know more about Joel or you want to see his Facebook, his YouTube, JoelSilverman.net is where you want to go. We are running out of time. There's only a minute left. I've got so much more to ask you. Three more emails. Will you come back on the show, Joel?
I would love to come back. I really appreciate you guys for having me.
Oh, nice. Okay, everybody. We've got another segment coming. It's a packed show today, but you heard it from Joel. He'll be back, and I'm so glad to hear it because I just love talking training problems. And yeah, there's more than one way to train a dog and more than one way a dog can learn. So if you've got training problems, issues, maybe you've tried everything, maybe you just have something stubborn you'd like to get rid of, some kind of bad habit, send me your problem and we'll talk about it. All right, everybody, stay tuned. Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pep Talk Radio. Thank you, Joel.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
And I love you.
And you know that
you know
I really do.
I really do.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And well, we've just done three segments about dogs because you know I love dogs, but you might not know I love cats too. And I've been in cat rescue and done a whole bunch of things for cats, Cat Writers Association as well. And today we've got Chris Rubin back from Adopt a Shelter. Normally we tend to talk about dogs a lot. But not today, cat people. This is your day to hear us meow. So welcome to the show, Chris from Adopt a Shelter. Chris Rubin, welcome to the show.
Thanks again for having me, Deb. Yes, you know, we try and feature all the different species that end up in sanctuaries and shelters. Happens to be that last month it was rabbits. This month it's going to be cats. And today we're going to talk to Jeannie Veronin. She is with a wonderful organization from Warminster, Pennsylvania, called Cat Tales. Welcome, Jeannie.
Happy to be here.
Jeannie, tell us a little bit about how you got involved with your organization and in cat rescue in general.
Well, I first met my husband about 14 years ago, and I was completely a dog person. And when we first started dating, he asked me if I have a cat or dog person. I said, well, I'm really a dog person. And I saw the look on his face, and I said, oh, I guess that was the wrong answer. He told me he had a cat of 11 years, and I'm like, well, okay. Well, needless to say, his cat turned me into a crazy cat lady. It was a special, special little guy. And then when I stopped working a couple years ago, due to some health issues, I, you know, was crying and bereft and inconsolable. And shortly thereafter, I said, well, I'm going to do something here. And I went to my local PetSmart, and they happened to have been having an adoption day there with my organization called Cat Tails. And I kind of signed up, and now I'm on the board. I'm the volunteer coordinator and chief cook and bottle washer as far as what needs to be done with the organization.
And well, you know what? I want to know what does need to be done. What are you guys doing for cats out there?
Well, we get our cats from several different venues. Many times we get a person calling that has to surrender their cat. Either the child has developed an allergy. Unfortunately, many older folks who wind up going into assisted living facilities, et cetera, have to surrender their cats. We also have some that come in through a stray situation. Someone calls and says, hey, this cat's been parked on my porch for the last 3 days. We don't know what's going on. Then we also get
Are you a cat catcher? Do you catch them? Is that one of the things you do personally?
No, I do not. No? We do have one person in our organization that has done trapping. Usually when someone calls and says, you know, this cat's been hanging around, looks emaciated, et cetera, you know, but they can't get close enough to catch it, then we do trap.
Yeah, live humane trap, like a box.
Yes,
okay,
exactly.
So Chris, have you got some questions for her? Because this is really good stuff, and I don't want to interrupt, but I got loads of questions. So I'm hoping you've
well,
got
you
some,
go
too.
Because I know you're loaded right now, so go.
Well, I wanted to ask about senior cats, because I know those that's a big problem. Do you get a lot of senior cats, and are there some special needs we should know about with senior cats with you?
We do. We have gotten several senior cats, that, again, mainly through surrender, with older adults having to go into facilities that they can't bring their cats. We do have a Senior for Seniors program where we do place, and what we consider a senior cat is really, 10, 11 years or older, where somebody looking for a cat may not necessarily want to invest the time or emotional attachment in a cat of that age. But what we do with that cat is we will place it in the home of an older person where we still maintain the responsibility for the cat. In other words, if the cat has to go to the vet, they contact us and say, I have a vet appointment at such and such a time. And one of our volunteers will go pick up the cat, take it to the vet. We also, if the nails need to be clipped, something like that, we, take care of that kind of thing. The only thing that we have to make sure that the senior person taking the senior cat is that they are able to provide the basic care, such as the food, water, and the scooping of the litter. But then everything else really we take care of. So it's really a win-win because, quite frankly, and I know many shelters, they're very concerned about adopting out to an older person, which I understand because if something happens to that person, they wind up with the cat back, usually. The cat at that point after 5 or 6 years is then a senior cat and then very hard to adopt out. So this way it enables us to get a senior cat into a senior home. It's really a win-win for both sides.
And the health benefits are known now. They're being well documented by groups like Habri that says people are living healthier lives because of the connection with and attachment to these animals.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, in England, if you're over 65, you can get what's called a prescription pet for a dog or cat, small dog or cat. And some of your vet care is subsidized, some of your feed bills, because they figured out that senior citizens who own pets see the doctor less, drain the system less. I mean, it's math.
I absolutely can see the difference a loving pet makes in a home. I see it firsthand, and I see it anecdotally through. We do stay in touch with our adopters. We do follow-up calls when they are placed in the home just to make sure everything is going well and it's a fit. And, you know, I can't tell you how many wonderful stories we get back from seniors, from our seniors to senior adoption, and just our regular adopters. I mean, there's nothing that makes me happier when you have that special adoption take place that just, you know, brings the tears to your eyes and reminds you why sometimes, you know, when it gets a little frustrating when you're trying to raise funds or you know, you don't have enough volunteers to handle things and you get kind of a little crazy and you're banging your head against the wall. But then you have those kind of stories and those kind of situations that remind you why you do what you do.
Okay, so we are running out of time, but I want to make sure, Chris, you get a chance to tell people how they can help Jeannie with Adopt a Shelter. So if we've got cat lovers out there that are buying stuff anyway online, what can they do, Chris?
Well, you just, every time you're thinking about shopping online, click through adoptashelter.com first, then connect to your favorite store. We got over 750 of them. Jeannie can attest to the fact that she's getting money from us, and it's so simple. It's no extra cost to the consumer. You have so many choices, and 100% of the donation amount that you see on the website goes directly to the shelter of your choice. And Jeannie would certainly appreciate it if you chose cattails. Jeannie, I just want to get one quick note. Tell us your most rewarding story.
It happens to be the little orange cat that is sitting on my lap as I'm speaking to you. He was found on the streets a couple towns over. We took him in. We had gotten a call that this was a stray cat, and his right eye was very distended. It was determined that it was about to rupture, and they had to remove the eye. Well, fast forward a couple of months.
Oh, dear. That sounds hard to look at.
Oh, but it was difficult. I don't even notice that he has one eye now because we've had him for 5 years now. But
you know, I just met a Boston Terrier with a glass eye. There's a lot that's doable, but you know what? Pets don't care about these things. It's our squeamishness, right?
No, all my little Zeke wants is his belly rubbed and his num-nums. And once his eye was removed, and he was a very expensive cat, special needs, and he languished in our system. And shortly before Christmas, I dragged my poor husband down to the store, and I said, you have to meet this cat. He fell in love. I was already in love. And it was right before Christmas. So needless to say, that was our Christmas present to each other.
Oh, wow. You are so dedicated. All right, everybody. I want you to help her. I want you to help Jeannie help the cats. I want you to go to adoptashelter.com. If you're going to buy stuff online anyway, why not do it this way? You'll feel good about it. Okay. So thank you, Chris.
Oh, thank
and
you
one
so
just
much,
quick
as always.
Thing. I just want to mention all of our supporters have loved using Adopt a Shelter. It's not been a problem for them. They go to their sites just like they normally would. Everything works like they normally would. It was money you were going to spend anyway. And also, our cat Tails is T-A-L-E-S, just so in case you're looking for us.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Jeannie. And I guess I get to say chow meow to Jeannie.
Meow, meow, chow meow.
Of course, I knew she would speak cat. Okay, Chris, are you going to give it a shot? You going to say goodbye to us and cat?
I am definitely going to say meow, meow, meow. I'd sing the Nine Lives song if I actually had any kind of voice.
Oh, nice. Well, if you were a cat, you would flop your tail over and let it gently touch the tail of Jeannie to show her that you are affectionate friends and you like each other. So that's how you speak cat. There's not a lot of vocalization. It's a lot more body language, which is hard to do on the radio. But to say goodbye in cat, I believe it would go something like, meow, no big deal. No big deal. Cats are more excited by hellos than goodbyes. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Until next time, Chris. Everybody stay tuned to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. We're going to talk about travel, and then we're going to talk more on cats. You might want to hear this bit, Deanie. Okay, stay tuned, everybody, to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, with me, Deb Wolf, debwolf.ca, or if you want to check out the Dogs at Camp Good Dog on Facebook, you can. And there was something terrible in the news I should tell you about. If you live where I live, Vancouver, BC, Canada, and you live in the north up here, in the north of BC, you got to watch out. They are now trying to get to the bottom of what's going on in a gigantic fighting ring. Now, there's other places in the world that deal with this, but pet dogs, labs, goldens, pit bulls, mastiffs, all kinds of dogs have just gone missing from people's yards and been used. And there's a petition going around. There's something on Facebook. If you live in the north of my province and you don't know about this, go online and find out, because you don't want your dog disappearing as a bait dog. And you might want to go out to a town meeting and do something about getting a handle on those dog fighting people. You know, the SPCA used to give out a huge reward for any reports on this. So there might be a reward out there if you can just get some information that will help, because we definitely don't want pet dogs going missing, and we don't want any dogs fighting for money. Absolute horrible. Okay, so we're going to move from that story, which is very depressing, and but at least they found out about it, and they're cracking down on it, and there's something going on. So hopefully, they'll save some dogs, they'll find some dogs, and they'll stop more from going missing. In the meantime, we're going to be talking right now about traveling with your pets. And of course, I was just talking about fighting dogs. And most of the time when you hear breed bans, you automatically, your mind just right away goes to pit bull, maybe Rottweiler. It probably doesn't go to Dogo Argentino. It probably doesn't go to Cane Corso, although dogs like that have been implicated in a few very high-profile cases of where people died, one in San Francisco a few years back in a lobby. But there are dogs more aggressive, more vicious, more likely to hurt people, more likely to cause harm than Rotties and Pit Bulls, than Mastiffs even. There are lots of dogs out there. So the breed bans tend to target just a few and only the ones that have made the news. And then what really is a Pit Bull? What really is a Rottweiler? How much of a mutt can he be to no longer be called a Rottie or a Pit Bull? And then what about the dogs that look like them, like boxers? They get unfair treatment just because they happen to look like the guy everybody's got in the news. So breed bans, I've talked about them before, and it's usually in connection with all this sort of stuff, fighting dogs and aggression and people making rules that don't work. But there's another kind of breed ban that actually does work to save lives. And so we're going to be talking about that with Precious Pets Transport today. And Jill, welcome to the show, Jill.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you. So, okay, so this is a breed ban or an embargo on certain breeds.
Right.
Not allowed to travel by plane, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, now, so can you explain this?
Yeah. It's what they call the brachycephalic breeds. Any of the breeds, cats and dogs, that have the flat faces, they if it gets too hot inside, they because of their hereditary respiratory problems, these animals are susceptible to increased risk of heat stroke and breathing problems when exposed to the compression up in the airplane. So the American Bulldog, the Boston Terrier, the Boxers, the Brussels Griffins, the Bull Terriers, the Pugs, Chins.
Okay, so these are all the dogs that some people would say it looks like they ran into a wall. Right? Their faces sort of squished.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so all of them. What about boxers? Are they on the list, or are they big enough to be okay?
They are on the list.
Now,
some of these can fly as long as the temperatures are not too hot, too cold, as required by the airlines. But usually during the months of May through to September, because of the heat through the U.S. is over 75 degrees, they are banned completely through the summertime. at completely.
And places like Las Vegas. I mean, you got to use your head. Arizona. Yes. It's going
to
be hot all year round.
You have to go by ground.
It's not safe, right?
You cannot get moved in the summertime by plane at all. So now during the winter months, again, all animals are subject to the low temperature restrictions because if the planes get too cold. But you definitely want to be aware if you've got a flat-faced dog, you've got to be asking yourself, do I really want to put this in a cargo hold of a plane? Is it going to be too hot? Am I going to have a stop? Is my plane going to have a stop where my animal is going to be moved out of one plane onto a tarmac, onto a van, and then moved across and put on another plane? Is that going to be too hot going across that tarmac? So a lot of the airlines are getting with the program about brachycephalics, and some of them, you know, they'll talk you through it. When you go to book your flight, they'll talk you through your breed and whether it can or cannot fly. Okay,
so when sometimes I sell puppies, sometimes standard poodle puppies, and I almost only sell them locally because I never want to ship a puppy. I think it messes up its head to have a journey that young with so much noise and scary things.
Totally,
so
yeah,
I don't
do
it.
Puppies. Yeah.
But if a person is willing to take the puppy on the plane in a very, very small kennel underneath the seat with them, and the puppy will be with them the entire journey, I don't mind at all. That's a totally different thing.
Again,
so
is that okay for these dogs?
Is that okay for these brachycephalic, these pushed-in face dogs? Can they fly with the owner?
You're restricted to height and weight going in cabin.
Right.
Your maximum weight, crate and pet, cannot be more than 20 pounds, period. So if you've got a bulldog who's 70 pounds, okay, he's not going in cabin. Which means during the summer months, you have to have him driven, or you put him with grandma and wait until the weather goes and then send him on later, or you have him driven by ground by a company like us. So,
and your company, Precious Pets Transport Service, they'll get your dog there when you have to relocate or when there's some reason why you have to move, and you know, you look it up and you can't ship the dog. Maybe you don't want it spending 6 months with grandma. Maybe a better solution is to send it with Precious Pets Transport.
Exactly. So it's we're door-to-door on the ground service all through the summer, okay? The dogs are fed, walked, watered. Cats are given litter trays, food and water. And we go coast-to-coast throughout the United States. So.
Okay, so I hear about this 82 series kennel. What's the 82 series kennel? What's the significance of that?
Okay, the 82, you were just talking about the breeds that are typically classified as like fighting breeds, like the Cane Corsos and the Pit Bulls especially. Some of the airlines, they're banned completely. They will not take them at all. There are a couple of airlines that will take them if you buy the specialized 82 series crate, and that is a metal reinforced crate, okay? They are, unfortunately, extremely expensive. But if you're going to be a frequent traveler, you buy it once and then you've got it.
And if the right kennel's not used on a dog that can blow kennels apart, this is I had one, a dog named Keisha.
Yes.
I hadn't yet met her. When I met her, she had just endured, survived, and been on the news at LAX. They had relocated from Los Angeles to Vancouver, BC, Canada. And somehow this coyote cross, lean little shepherd cross dog got out of her kennel. There was a Cocker Spaniel traveling with her. That dog was still fine. And she went running and running and running and running all
and
through the, on the tarmac.
It
was terrible. By the time I got her, the people were like, you will make sure she doesn't get out, right? You will, right? You know, they were so worried. But, you know,
the
some
82
dogs
series
are very good at
that.
Escape.
Yeah, they cannot chew through the 82 series kennel. That's why the airlines make sure you have to have one for those breeds that they have on their list. And that's the American Bulldogs, the Staffies, the Prasa Malaquins, the Cane Corsos, the Dogo Argentinos. And the list is
American Bulldog. You know what? This ties in with what you and I were talking about before we came on. American Bulldog is not like the British Bulldog. Just like an American cup of hot tea is not like the British cup of hot tea.
Exactly.
An American Bulldog is twice the size.
Yes.
It's a different dog altogether.
Totally different.
And the British cup of hot tea is actually hot. So thank you for joining us today.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Appreciate it. And we'll chat with you again next week.
Oh, I hope so. We've run out of time, and we can elaborate more on the perfect cup of tea next time with PreciousPetsTransport.com.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Okay, everybody, stay tuned. We're going for a walk on the cat side. Do you know that cats can jump 6 times their height? They really can. Stay tuned.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
And I love you.
And you know that.
You know
I really do.
I really do.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk with me, Deb Wolf, debwolf.ca or Camp Good Dog on Facebook. And I'm here now with Marcy Kosky. I told you before the break that a cat can jump 6 times its height. Now maybe you thought that was no big deal. Okay, so say you're a 5-foot tall woman, that's 30 feet. Say you're a 6-foot tall man, that's 36 feet. Just standing there right now, I want to see you do that if you think that's no big deal. It's a big deal. They're tremendous athletes compared to us. And we're going to talk more about the wonderful things that go along with loving and owning cats. And sometimes maybe people love cats too much and how that could present difficult problems for the cat trainer entering a home of, let's say, 10 cats in 800 square feet. That's what we're going to talk about today. Welcome to the show, Marcy.
Hi, Deb. I'm so happy to be back here.
Oh, it's nice having you. Yes. Yeah. Well, okay. 10 cats, 800 square feet. How does that work?
Yes. So I'm a cat behaviorist, and I help people out with their litter box issues or aggression issues. And I've been getting a lot of multi-cat requests for help lately. One of the more recent ones was, in fact, 10 cats in an 800 square foot home. And I go in and, the place doesn't smell very good. And there's all these cats lounging around. And, there you can obviously see some spray marks. And the main complaint that the cat mom had was that 2 cats weren't getting along, and that was causing all the spraying. Well, that might have been part of it.
Tip of the iceberg, I guess.
Tip of the iceberg.
Maybe 2 cats were getting along.
Right. So you have to really kind of identify reasonable goals for working with someone who has multiple issues happening. And fortunately, she knew she had too many cats in the space that she had available. So she was very open to suggestions. Trying to build up confidence for one of the cats that was getting picked on and increasing the play that these cats were getting so that they could take out some of their aggression and their prey drive on appropriate toys. Instead of with each other.
What about bookshelves around the perimeter so they'd kind of expand their space?
Yes. So catification, that was another thing that I recommended. Catification.
That's a word?
It is a word, yes. So that was something I definitely recommended. And she did have some cat shelves up on one area of her wall, but she definitely needed more because 800 square feet for 10 cats is just so little. But if you increase
and
that
they don't
vertical
mind
space,
the other level, right? The 6 inches from the ceiling you're not using, that's free space to cats. That's good space to cats.
They love it. They love it. Cats really like to be up high so that they can see their entire surroundings. They feel safe up there. They feel powerful up there. They feel confident up there. So, yeah,
Even timid cats like it. Timid cats like it because they're out of reach.
Right.
Bully cats, bossy cats, confident cats like it because they can see their domain. They all like it. You just have to figure out a way up and down that isn't the curtains, right?
Exactly. Yes. They will get up there if you don't provide them a way. And the way that they get up there might not be something that you want them to do.
Exactly. So sometimes in the olden days, we used to, and this is not so long ago, even 5 years ago, we used to take a pill and just shove it down the cat's throat and then close the cat's jaws and rub its throat.
Right.
And then I found out that that is really not cool, that it's so much better if you can break the pill up and put it into wet cat food and then using a syringe shove that down the cat's throat so that it's actually taking in food and water at the same time. Otherwise, the pill will get lodged and it'll cause all these problems.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, right. The first time, maybe. The second day you try to do this, your cat's on to you. It's a whole other ballgame to try and give him his second dose of pills. So have you got a solution for us that helps with medicating cats? Because it's not easy once they figured out what you're up to.
It's all very difficult. So, you know, pills are terrible because they know about trickery. And they will eat all around it unless you're able to crush it up, in which case they know it's in there and they will refuse to eat anything that you put it in. Liquid medications are just as bad. I don't know why they make amoxicillin, which is, you know, your general...
antibiotic.
Yeah, antibiotic. They make it taste like banana and bubblegum for cats. And I volunteer at a shelter, and one week or so, a lot of the cats had an upper respiratory infection, and we had to give all the cats amoxicillin. And I came out just covered in that stuff, and it was so terrible trying to give them that medication.
It stains, and it smells like artificial fruit. And cats, they're not big fruit eaters. Who would think to flavor it? I mean, at least the toothpaste is flavored, you know, mouse liver. Because that makes sense to a cat, right?
Right. Well, I found...
I wouldn't want to be a tester, though, a taste tester in that factory.
No. No, thank you. I found this product called Goofer. It's G-O-O-F-U-R-R. And what it is, it's a smoked salmon paste, and it's in this tube. And the ingredients were pretty much just that. Smoked salmon, some water. I think it had like a binder, but I knew what it was. It wasn't, you know, anything I couldn't pronounce. I can't remember what it was. But
like melamine from China. That wasn't it, right?
No. It was something very like cornstarch.
Because you do have to read
like that,
guys. You got to read the labels. Seriously. Read. Get your glasses out. Don't just say, oh, it's too fine print. I'll assume it's good. Read labels. So you read the label checked out, the stuff checked out. Smoked salmon paste. That sounds like it'd be good on a bagel with cream cheese, really.
Well, that's just it. I opened up the tube and I was like, this smells really good. I could put it on a cracker or something. And, you know, it only had like 4 ingredients in it. And you do have to refrigerate it. But basically, it even comes with this little spoon. And you put a little squirt on the little spoon. And I can't crush up my cat's medication, but you can crush it up or just put the little pill in the blob of Goofer. And my cats just eat it right off the spoon because they are like, they are in love with it. It's just smoked salmon.
That'd make it so much easier if you had to do this to every, you know, twice a day for 10 days or something like that, which is normal.
Yeah. And then the other way you can do it is, and I think this would work better if you had to crush up your cat's pill or use a liquid medication, you can actually mix it into the Goofer and then take that little spoon and actually rub it onto the cat's fur, and they will lick it off themselves because they have to, and that's what cats do.
You're manipulative.
They'll lick anything off of their fur because they don't like stuff on their fur.
No, it's smart. It's smart. So, and that, you know, that kind of extends to the idea that you got to be really careful what you put on your cat's fur, your dog's fur. You don't use products that are maybe for people or children and might have something in it like zinc that can really throw off an animal. You got to be careful what you use on them, in other words. Make sure it's pet specific and tested and tried.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And take a look at the ingredients. And if you don't know what it is, ask somebody or look it up online. I mean, you have to be careful when you're Googling things. You want a reputable source, but... you know, there are some weird things in both human and pet products that you might want to, you know, steer clear of. But Goofer, I really liked that the ingredients were all, like, you knew what they were, limited ingredients, and my cats just ate it right up. And so that makes me excited because I have a 17-year-old cat, and he's on a number of medications right now to deal with a couple different things. And
you don't want him experiencing a few times a day this unpleasant battle of wills.
Exactly.
You want him to actually think it's good.
Right, exactly. I want it to be a treat instead of like, you know, oh gosh, I hate you now. You know, that type of thing. You don't want your cat to run away from you when you come. So
that's the thing. I mean, dogs are way easier to give meds to. Cats, really, it can be a problem.
Yeah.
It really can.
Yeah.
Okay, so you deal with tricky cats all the time. And I'm guessing, like with me, I don't usually see cats who are a little bit naughty. It takes an awful lot for a person to call me. So tell me a horror story you've had to face lately. Where's a cat you walk in and it's like, Well, they didn't have to tell me what's wrong in this scenario. Look at that. Oh, my. Cat's announcing its problem.
Well, actually, I had a cat not too long ago, but his name was Dash. And Dash is a friend of mine's cat. And I got, you know, all these Facebook messages ahead of time saying, ooh, I heard you were going to work with Dash. Good luck with that. So this cat had a bit of a reputation for being really nasty with people. Just okay. Very, very nasty. And
has its claws, right?
Yes. Okay. Claws, okay. Scratching.
Fully armed, ready to go. Nasty
very
cat.
Well armed. You know, you can just look at
likes
him
its
and he
reputation.
Starts
growling. Got a reputation to defend.
Exactly.
Got some good habits. Ready, you come into its house, it's going to show you. You smell like cat, it's going to show you.
Right,
what
right.
Happened? What happened?
Right. Well, okay, so he didn't like me that much. but, you know, this really? Was an instance where, you know, you have to read the cat. You have to say, okay, the cat is definitely showing signs of agitation. You know, you look at the eyes, you look at the whiskers, you look at the ears, the body position, what the tail is doing, and you can immediately tell, like, I'm not going to stick my hand in front of that cat. What I did do, though, was I worked with Dash's dad, to implement a clicker training routine.
Good plan. Let him get attacked. I like it.
I basically discovered that Dash had not been getting very much play, and he was a young cat, a flame point Siamese, just young, had a lot of energy, didn't know where to put it. Had a great
I find
tree.
Siamese a little bit needy. I find they are very vocal. They sound like babies, and they're a little bit needy. They like attention, don't they?
Yes. Yes, they do. And they're very smart, too. So, and the other great thing about Dash was that he was highly food motivated. So that makes any kind of training a lot easier. But anyway, I got him on this clicker training program. I showed his dad how to do the clicker training. And within 5 minutes, we had Dash sitting, taking the command sit on his own for treats. Very smart cat. And then I, you know, a few weeks later, I got an email back from Dash's dad saying, this is a completely different cat. He lets people play with them, is affectionate, knows, you know, when it's treat time, knows
you know,
when it's play time.
That so reminds me of a kid, when a kid just is so used to bugging to get attention, then all of a sudden he makes his first friend and he gets it, that he doesn't have to be against everybody anymore.
Right.
It's like a light goes on. Wait a minute. I can engage in a different way, right?
Right, exactly. So it really opened up the lines of communication between Dash and his dad, and they have a much better relationship now, and Dash is much friendlier with people. And it just took some understanding between, you know, Dash's dad needed to be educated a little bit on what Dash's limits were. But once they opened up that line of
what do you mean limits? Was first of all, was Dash named after the characteristic of like hit and run attacks where he would dash off after doing something bad.
I don't know if that's why he was named Dash,
and then,
but it's highly appropriate.
What was the dad? Was the dad doing rough play excessively and then expecting his cat to be mellow?
I don't think he was doing rough play because his dad definitely knew when Dash was going to strike out at him, and he had been struck out at many times before,
so he'd heard that sound.
But
that
he would continue to provoke.
He'd heard that, had he?
Yeah. I mean, he would continue to provoke. Like, he knows he's mad, but he would keep sticking his hand in front of the face just to get a reaction. You know, it's kind of like just a little kid trying to see what's
going to
come next.
This guy doesn't sound... You know what? I like Dash better than I like Dash's owner at this point.
He definitely needed some education about what cats like and what they don't like. So...
I never advocate, swats on the nose for animals, but I think this man maybe there's a call for it. I don't know.
Why would you bug a cat
when it's already telling you it's had enough? Okay, so if you're petting your cat and you think your cat is just aggressive or feisty, this goes for anybody out there. If you're petting your cat and your cat sort of, when you're petting it, it often will seem to love it and then all of a sudden attack you, or all of a sudden it gets stiffer and stiffer and then it kind of bites you. Okay, it's not all of a sudden. Right. Try going half the firmness. So if you're using your whole hand, just use your fingertips. If you're stroking it hard from head to tail, try just stroking its face with your fingertips or the back of your hand instead of the front. Try going at half the pressure. Your cat will tolerate it for twice the length. He's trying to tell you he's a 10 to 15 pound animal and, you know, he can't take this kind of rubbing for that long. Go easy. If you use your fingertips, he's just going to arch his back and lean into you and show you what pressure he wants. He may want it a little bit rougher or a little bit more gentle. But if you're not responsive to that and you're just forcing him to accept it rough, he's going to get rough back. He has no choice.
Absolutely. And if you don't know, really learn the signals of body language that cats put out. You can look at their ear position, what their whiskers are doing, what their tails are doing.
Okay, let's go over that. So the ear position.
Yeah.
Pinned back, not good, right, Marcy?
Right. So pinned back, all the way back, is usually a very frightened cat. Pinned flat and kind of to the side is an aggressive cat. And you better watch
it. And perky and upright or moving and angling like antennae, that's happy and interested. Don't worry about that. If they seem to be moving, it's just listening to birds or something, listening to people upstairs. It's just they move their ears independently. So sometimes it looks like, you know, something's going on there. But that's nothing. That's just a happy cat. Okay, so what about tail? You know, sometimes people think a dog wagging its tail is always happy. But if a dog's tail is wagging in a very methodical, harsh sort of a way, like bang, 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 that can be a sign of aggression. So
yeah,
in cats,
an angry cat.
The tail tells a lot, right, Marcy?
Oh, absolutely. It's just like a little thermometer that the cat can't really control.
sticking straight up, watch out, right?
Well, sticking straight up can actually mean that the cat is happy, confident, excited to see you. Usually, if a cat is feeling friendly, the tail will be straight up and with maybe a little curve at the top.
Curve at the end, yeah, the end, like a little loop at the end, almost like the shape of a cane.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But what if it's, to me, when it's straight up and it's twitching, that's a cat spraying, usually.
It can be, but I actually heard something else about that. I like to call it tinkle tail because it does have. They do that when they're spraying, and it's not exactly tinkling, but I call it tinkle tail because it's kind of cute. But cats will do that when they're really excited about something, and so if they come up to you and they do the little tinkle tail, that little shivery, quivery tail, they're excited to see you. I read that as another interpretation of that, and I started paying attention to it with my own cats, and I'm like, you know what? That could actually be right. So.
Yeah, I think so. Because sometimes when I'm gardening, one of them will come up to me and do that. And there's no mark. I look. I wouldn't scold them if they did. I'm in the garden. I don't care. But there's no mark left. So I wondered. Right. I wondered about that, too, if that one was just shooting blanks or not that dominant or, you know. But if you see that in a cat that often sprays in your house and he's in the area, he's doing it, right?
Yeah, that might be not so good.
Not so good.
It's all about context.
Yes. Okay. So if they have a cat that is marking, spraying, peeing in the wrong place, I notice you called it litter box issues, but it's kind of a misnomer. It's more like pees on the carpet issue or pees in the bathtub issue.
Anywhere but the litter box issue.
What can people do?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, there are so many reasons a cat can be going outside the litter box. There's, you know, spraying and marking, which is very different than inappropriate elimination, which is like peeing or pooping outside of the litter box, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many different reasons why cats can be, you know, pooping and peeing outside of the litter box. The first thing you need to rule out is a medical issue. I always tell that to my clients. When was the last time you visited the vet? Did they do a urine sample? And sometimes it actually takes a few times of testing to see a problem. For example, if they have crystals in their urine, crystals aren't always present because it changes with pH.
And that's the most common cause, right?
Yes, absolutely. We have a lot of shelter cats in the volunteer organization, rescue organization. We have a lot of cats there who were sent there because they had inappropriate elimination issues, but then we test them, and lo and behold, they have crystals in their urine, which is very painful to pass. And then they begin to associate the litter box with pain, and so they avoid the litter
box. And then people get mad, and people scold them, and now the cat has all kinds of issues, and it's not his fault. He just needed some help with a medical problem.
Right,
so sad.
Then it can turn into a stress-related problem. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then you have to deal with identifying the stress triggers, what exactly is the issue that's causing the stress and the need to eliminate outside of the litter box. And there are so many different reasons, and it's, you know, you really have to do some detective work, and that's when you hire somebody like me.
Well, okay, before we end the program, I would like to tell them, so let's tell them, if they want to hire you, how do they find you?
Oh, you can go to my website, and the web address is www.felinebehaviorsolutions.com, and, or, you know, you can, my telephone number's there, you can fill out an email form, you can reach me, Marci, M-A-R-C-I, at felinebehaviorsolutions.com. I do consultations locally. I'm in Vancouver, Washington, but I also
Oh, you are? Yes, oh, that's exciting. You're the first person I've ever talked to there. I've always wondered, do people always mistake you and ask you, is that Vancouver, Canada? Do they do that?
They do, all the time.
They do that here, too.
Right.
All the time.
I also do Skype consultations, so you can actually take me around your home, and I can diagnose problems that way. You know, it's very rare that I actually have to do very much interaction with the cat. It's more about teaching people how to bring out the appropriate behaviors in their cat.
Well, that's so true with cats especially, you know,
yeah.
because, I mean, even with dogs, you train the dog and then you go train the people on how to treat the dog the way you've taught it, is so that they can get the same results. So they don't, the dog just doesn't go back to old habits, old people, old rules.
Right.
But with a cat, you're not even, as a stranger, you're not going to get the behavior. I mean, a cat that's
right.
being bossing and bullying its family may hide from a stranger.
Exactly.
You can't really do much when you're visiting except ask and talk. And
right.
so it makes so much sense to do it by Skype, especially since then they can, you can see. And when they say, oh, there's plenty of litter boxes, you see, well, yes, while there's three, they're all together in the same area, which
exactly.
means it's just one big one. You know,
exactly.
or you start to see what really the problem is, because cats do fight over litter box, and they
mm-hmm.
will hoard, and they will bully. And sometimes the one making the most noise is not the one who's causing the problem. That's the victim. And
right.
it's very tricky to tell all this stuff. So you sometimes need an expert to just have a little look for you. But I do often recommend Dusty Rainbolt's book, Cat Wrangling Made Easy. It's for people with multi-cat homes. And I also like her Cats for Dummies book. She was supposed to be a guest of ours today joining us, Marci, but somehow or other, she's probably out rescuing a cat. That's probably what happened. So we're here together. But I want to ask you, is there a particular shelter or rescue group you support?
Well, I volunteer with a no-kill, 100% volunteer-run organization called Furry Friends. And again, we're in Vancouver, Washington, and we're very small, but we're growing. We've been around for, I think, 17 years now. It's awesome. I love it. It's been so rewarding to work there.
Like a teenager. You've been around 17 years. So, you know, they know what they're doing now. They got the kinks out of the program. They know what they're doing, but they need some help. They haven't been around so long that they're on the government list of handouts. So they need your help at Furry Friends. And we've been talking to Marci, talking about cat training. She told you how to get a hold of her. If you have cat or dog problems, you can send them to me. I know Dusty was collecting what she calls, what was it? She had this phrase, improper cat elimination issues. I believe that's her phrase for poop and pee outside the litter box. You got a poop and pee story outside the litter box? Dusty wants it. I don't. I got him. I get them all. I know what you're saying. More litter boxes.
I gave a couple
people.
To Dusty. I gave
yeah, did you?
Dusty.
Me too. More litter boxes, more locations, more variety.
Yeah.
Some cats don't want to crawl in an overhead. Some cats don't want an automatic. So try a bunch of different things. Keep the receipts. See what works. That's what you're going to go with. If you got three cats, you need four litter boxes. And not all in one spot where one cat stands guard and doesn't let the others use it. You want a clean house. Okay, everybody. We've been talking with Marci, and I'm sure we'll have you back in the future. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
Oh, it's always great. Thank you. Okay, everyone. So until next week, from me, Deb Wolf, here at Camp Good Dog, and DebWolf.ca. I'm just saying goodbye and telling you to be good to your animals. From me, Deb Wolf, and Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And anytime you're near-